Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup Podcast. Chad Young here with Pete Ball, and we are officially at the All-Star break. We're recording this on Sunday evening. All baseball is over for the day, and so the All-Star break is upon us, Pete. It's happening. I don't know how to feel about that. I always feel like it seems like it's really early in the baseball season until all of a sudden I'm like, oh crap, the All-Star break is next week. And then it's like, I guess it's not early anymore.
Yeah, it's like kind of scary too for fantasy, because it's like, man, the clock is really ticking on some of these teams. You know, am I ready to buy or sell for a few teams? Can I rip the Band-Aid off? Things like that. But yeah, no, it's exciting that the All-Star break is here. But you're right, it's feels like it came quickly this year.
It does. It does. And I have been less attentive to fantasy baseball this year than I have in any year in recent memory. And it shows with the number of my teams that are like way behind on games caps and stuff, like just got rosters haven't been set the way they should. Players sitting on my roster that have been in my rot. Like when I set my lineups, I often don't have much time to spend on them. So I don't really look at relievers that often. And like, I've got a couple of leagues where Tommy Canley's just killed me the last couple of days because he's been awful. But like, yep. I don't know why he's even still on my rosters. I could have cut him weeks ago, but I just haven't been. And so it's really sinking my teams. It's not making for a fun year. But I'm still doing my research so I can, you know, come on this podcast and not say stupid things, or say not as many stupid things as I would if I didn't do research. I'll still say some, I'm sure. But anyways, with that wonderful intro that I'm sure leaves our listeners feeling super confident in my advice this year, let's talk head-to-head heroes. There are some great choices this week, and I honestly, like, I don't know where to go with this. I've got a couple names in mind, so I'm gonna let you go first and see if you take one of them.
Yeah, I'm gonna start a trend where, like, my luck in my home league is just so bad, I'm just gonna look at my opponent's team. And this week, the scrub that killed me is none other than Zach McKinstry, who I call a scrub. I'm only kidding. Don't get upset, Tigers fans. He's good, man. Like, he has produced to a pretty solid beat this year. And over the last week, Zach McKinstry, who on ESPN is shortstop, third base, and outfield eligible, he might have second base eligibility, I think, in a few other formats. 5 for 18. So that's not jumping off the page, but 278 isn't killing you, with 4 stolen bases, 5 walks, 5 RBI, 2 homers, 13 total bases, and 4 runs over the last week has been Zach McKinstry. And, you know, he's not necessarily, I wouldn't call him like an everyday player, but he does play quite a bit for the Tigers, who have obviously exceeded expectations this year. I don't think he's obviously a guy you're looking at really in keeper leagues, even if he pops off in the second half and like he could conceivably finish as like a 15-30 player. Like, he's barely on pace for that. And 15-30 with a 285 average, I mean, that's good. Zach McKinstry, yeah. 836 OPS this year, but he's 30 years old, kind of a utility guy, moves around, not always in the lineup. I guess one thing that sticks out to me, Chad, is his launch angle sweet spot percentage, this is so random, is in the 100th percentile on StatCast. Huh. So he really is maximizing, you know, his ideal swing, I guess would be the way to put that. And it shows. He's also got his walk rate up to a career high. So Zach McKinstry had a really solid week. He's having a great season. I think he deserves a shout out here, but I'm not sure there's much more to unpack from there.
Yeah, I mean, even with that, right? So that sweet spot, you know, because it's a launch angle thing, right? So like, mm-hmm. that explains why he has a 30.1% line drive rate, which is bonkers. I mean, that's an absurd number.
Explains the batting average.
And it explains the batting average, it explains the BABIP, like all of that falls into place. What I find fascinating is, even with all of that, his ex-WOBA is 325 versus a 363 WOBA. And that's because he has an 85.8 average exit velocity. His barrel rate is only 6.8%. His hard hit rate is only 32.7%. Like, what he is basically doing is hitting soft line drives all over the place. And that's Zach McKinstry's game, it seems. And the concern is that's not usually a sustainable approach. I'm a little surprised it comes with such a low XWOBA, because soft line drives are actually high XWOBA, right? They're part of the reason that XWOBA isn't predictive, is that hitting soft line drives is high XWOBA, but not usually repeatable. And so I do think, you know, the most likely outcome here for McKinstry is that line drive rate falls. His career line drive rate, by the way, is 24.3%. Even coming into this season, his line drive rate was 22.8%. So he's a high line drive rate guy. He's not going to go down to below 20% probably. But if it falls, you know, to 23, 24, 25% even, the home run per fly ball rate probably going to come down a bit, because he just doesn't hit the ball hard enough. And so, yeah, the pace is, you know, like you said, 15-30 he's got a 2.88 average. I think if I were betting on his second half stats, I would say a 250-ish average, which is still a huge improvement on his career numbers, 234 career hitter, 250-ish average with like 3 to 5 more home runs and 5 to 7 more stolen bases, which puts him at like, call it 12-22 instead of that 15-30 that you were talking about. And it's a pace that looks more like a guy who's like 8-15, right? And so like if I'm buying him now in a 5x5 league, I'm buying him thinking he's an 8-15, 250 kind of guy hitting in a good lineup where he'll score a lot and drive in a decent number for what he does. But yeah, this isn't, I'm not ready to pay for past performance on this one, because like the exit velocity is lower than it's been in his career. There's no new max EV. The barrel rate is right around his career rate. His hard hit rate is right around his career rate. The only thing that really stands out is that the walk rate has improved, and he's not really, like, career chase rate of 31.2%, it's 30.3% this year, not that different. He's swinging a little less, 65.1% versus 46% versus 46.7% for his career, but like he's swinging about the same amount. He's not really making more contact, 80.1% for the season, 80.4% for his career. The zone rate is up a little bit. I don't really see what's driving up that walk rate. And I don't see anything that says his improved batted ball performance is going to continue. And so I would just expect him to regress back to what he's been, which is,
his profile really, it really reminds me, he's not the same player, obviously, but when Castellanos was in Detroit being a line drive guy in Comerica, you know, that can really play up with that spacious outfield. And so when you brought up the line drives, I looked at his home road splits, and he really is a guy who, like, you want him in your lineup when they are playing in Detroit, and you kind of want to take him out when he's on the road. That's a 997 home OPS, a 666 OPS on the road. And I'm not surprised, given that that's his profile, yeah, of soft line drives. Comerica has a huge outfield, and that was something that Castellanos took advantage of early in his career as a line drive guy. And so I'm not surprised it's working out for McKinstry.
Yeah, I that's a good call. That's a great catch. So definitely something worth keeping in mind with him. For my head-to-head hero, I am torn between two players, and it's a little silly because I have both of these guys on the same team, and I got crushed in my head-to-head this week, but they were both really good. The honorable mention I'll name first is Kyle Stowers. I'm just mentioning him because he was insane today. On Sunday, I imagine most of our listeners already know this by the time they're listening on Monday, but Stowers with 3 home runs in his revenge game against Baltimore. He was 5 for 5, 3 home runs, 6 RBIs, 4 runs scored. That is a huge boost to any team. And it got me all the way back from to an 8-2 deficit with two categories tied to a 9-3 deficit with no categories tied. That's what you did for me. I just got smoked. And the guy who I'm going to get my head to head here, who's also on that team, Jose Ramirez this week, 304 average, 448 on base, four home runs, 10 runs, 11 RBIs, seven stolen bases without getting caught. I lost stolen bases in that league this week. He stole seven. My opponent stole nine. The rest of my team stole one.
Jesus.
Yeah. Not great. And I don't have like a ton of high steal guys. And so fine. Like, I guess that's what happens, but like, come on guys, you get three between you. But I may need to find some steals somewhere in that league, because that's just not gonna work. But you know, Ramirez, the other end of the spectrum from McKinstry, right? There's not a lot to talk about here. The guy was a first round pick. He's performing like a first round pick. He is, if I look at my, this is a CBS league where I have, so that's what I have up right now. His projected ranking by CBS before the season was seventh or fifth. He is seventh, actually. 18 home runs, 29 RBI or 29 stolen bases for Ramirez. He's hitting .297. He's putting up a huge year. It's wild to me how good he's been, and the Guardians have been below .500. And so I feel like nobody is really talking about Jose. Part of that is also just like, this is what he does every season. He always does this. But like, for all the talk about, like, you know, there's been talk about like what a great year Kyle Tucker's had, and Buxton's healthy and putting up a great season, and like those three players, Tucker, Buxton, and Ramirez, all have 3.8 F4. And I feel like Jose is just not getting the same chatter. It also doesn't help him that Aaron Judge and Cal Raleigh both exist, and so like the MVP race is not going to involve him. But yeah, that's a different story. But yeah, Jose Ramirez, my head-to-head player of the week, head-to-head hero of the week. Even though he, you know, didn't actually help me win because my team just sucked. So
sounds like a lot of my teams.
Yeah, that isn't actually one of my teams that's been bad this year either. Like, this team, this league is, you know, 12 teams, six make the playoffs. The top two get byes, and there is, part of the cash prize is partially based on regular season. And I am like right on the heels of the team in second, trying to get up into second. The team in first is sort of running away with things, so it would take a lot for me to get up to him. But like this week, that hurt. Although now that I'm looking, the team that's in second lost 11-1 this week. So maybe I didn't do so bad. Maybe I'm fine.
Gained ground.
Yeah, somehow. That's fascinating. I didn't expect that. Anyways, we're not going to keep going on and on about that team. What we are going to do today is talk a little bit about trades that have gone down in our leagues. We did this a few weeks ago. We'll do it again. We'll probably do it again even after this, because trade season is a huge part of keeper leagues, where you're figuring out who's going to stick around for next year, who are you going to rebuild around. And there have been some, I feel like trade season, at least in my leagues, and Pete, you'll tell me if it's the same for you, it's like, it's just really starting to pick up speed. I haven't seen a ton of blockbusters yet. I think guys are still holding on to some of their big names, but it's starting to move a little bit faster.
Yeah, I think it depends on the league. You know, we've got a lot of busy bodies in my league, and some guy in my home league, that is, and there's a lot of like fear of missing out. So when one person makes a trade, all of a sudden a few will flutter in, and then it'll cool down again. As we get closer to the deadline, our rules kind of shift a little bit. We open up draft pick trading 2 weeks before our actual trade deadline. So I expect a lot of trades will happen at that point. I part of the reason why I don't play in a lot of roto leagues is because I don't expect those to pick up, those trade deadlines. Like, I sent out a pretty substantial offer in one of my long-term leagues that involved like Jaron Duran and Yordan Alvarez, and like a bunch of, not a bunch of other, but at least one other like stud player that would have been leaving my team. Like, I'm selling. And I was selling to the first team in the standings, thinking like maybe they'll want to like cement their championship odds here. Right. And I was asking for some substantial prospects. I was asking for like Kevin McGonigal, who is outstanding this year and now up to double A, and one or two other guys. I know Chase Burns was in there, and he kind of responded with like exactly what I would have responded with, which is essentially like, great offer, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to win this league even without this trade, so no thanks. Whereas in a head-to-head league, the number one team in the standings is probably making that trade. But this dude is like, you know, 15 points up in the standings. And so it's done. I don't format shame anybody. Play what is fun for you, man. It's just trade deadlines seem to be less fun in Roto League. So in those, no, nothing is picked up. In my head-to-head ones, we're starting to see some trades trickle in.
Yeah, sometimes in those Roto Leagues, what you need to do to get that top team buying is sell cheap to the teams in second and third. Like, make some moves to close that gap to force that top team into the market. Mm. Because the like you said, the issue here is if the teams in second and third are like, we can't really catch them anyways, they're not going to pay a lot. But they'll pay something to try to get things moving. And the other thing you can do that I have seen work is, you know, you're shopping. Who did you say you were trying to trade when you asked for McGonigal?
I know Alvarez was in it. I know that I could figure out right now. Jaron Duran was in it. And I want to say Tyler Glass now, I think.
Okay. So I think part of where you can go with stuff like that is you get those guys in the trade block and you find out from someone what would they do? Like, doesn't have to be a deal you would take necessarily, but like, oh, I would give you this random prospect for Duran. And then you can go out to back to that first place team and be like, second place team made me an offer for Duran. Right? And like, do you care? And if not, then at some point you have to make a decision of like, okay, am I going to take what's theoretically a low ball offer? And if he's not a keeper, maybe you do take it. But a lot of times that'll get them to come back and be like, oh, okay, well, I guess I could give you this prospect. It's like, okay, I'll let you know. You go back to the other guy, okay, well, Ante's been upped a little bit, right? You gotta push in a little harder if you want to get Duran. And sometimes you can get them to bid against each other a little bit and drive that price up. And you may not be able to drive it all the way up to where you want it to go, but you can at least really figure out where the max is and get teams thinking more aggressively about how they should be buying and about the risk of not buying, right? Because the risk of not buying to that team isn't the status quo, right? That team in first can't be sitting there and thinking like, I'm running away with this. No one's as good as me. They've got to be looking at, you know, what's coming, right? What's going to happen if somebody else buys and closes the gap in a couple of categories and moves up in a couple of others? Because sometimes you can gain ground pretty quick, even if it looks like you're far behind. Yep. Right. I mean, just as an example of this, in our podcaster league, let me pull this up, 'cause I was looking at the standings for this the other day. I was going back and forth on what I want to do in that league and how aggressively I might want to buy. As of the end of day today, I am 6.5 points back. Now, it is worth noting the day started with me 8.5 points back. So that gap's been already closing. But I could easily see the team in first there. And there's the next team behind me is another 10 points back and then 12 points behind that. It's not a super close race. But I am 14 runs behind the team ahead of me in runs. That seems like a lot, but that's like, you know, a run and a half a week or something the rest of the way, right? It's very doable. I am much further back in home runs, and so I don't have to worry about home runs as much. I'm 8 RBIs away from overtaking the team that's ahead of me in the standings in RBIs. Stolen bases, again, a little bit of a bigger gap. Batting average, I think, is within reach of me gaining a point. Saves, I could possibly make a move to gain a point in saves. I could keep up if I keep up my pitch innings pitched pace, I have a shot to catch up in strikeouts, maybe. And then whip, I've got some room potentially. But it's all of that stuff is a stretch. And so all of those things, I don't know that I can trade for all of those things. I'm going to need my team to improve, basically. I'm also looking at some of the teams that are behind the team that's ahead of me in different categories and what it would take for them to catch it. I am honestly debating, just as an example, was it? I can't remember if it was stolen bases where. So I guess well, no, it wasn't stolen bases. I can't remember what category it was. There was some category where I was looking and thinking, I can't do much in this category. I don't need a lot here. But there was a team that was real close to passing the team that's in first. And I'm going to keep watching stuff like that because I may, as a second place team, trade to help like an eighth place team if it means they can surpass the first place team and get me a point closer in strikeouts or saves or whatever the category is, right? So be creative, I guess is what I'm getting at, right? Like look at your standings and figure out, because the reality is like it's a zero-sum game at some level, right? So like if you're chasing someone down, it isn't just how do you get better and how do you get more points. Like you can, if you can take points away from them, like that counts just as much. It's harder to do because you don't have as much control over other teams, but there are things you can do to tip the scales in your favor. So that'd be the other thing, I guess. It doesn't really help you if you're rebuilding, but if you're in a roto league where there isn't much trade happening, sometimes that's a way if you're a team near the top and you're trying to figure out what to do to close the gap and there's not a lot happening. Move a guy that you don't need.
Yeah.
But let's talk about some trades that have gone down. And Pete, we're going to start with, I think this is a fairly interesting trade. It's a pretty simple one. Just two players going back and forth. This was in my Sabre points league. This trade took place between a team that is in 10th and a team that is in second. The team that is in second gave up a $9 Christopher Sanchez. The team in 10th gave up a $41 Rafi Devers. And my initial reaction to seeing this was like, man, I can't believe he was able to get Sanchez. Like that was my first thought, because I'm also rebuilding in this league. And this is one of those leagues, like I said, I have not been doing a good job paying attention. I haven't been aggressively shopping. I have a $47 Vlad Guerrero Jr. I probably could have traded Vlad for Christopher Sanchez. And now my thought is I probably won't get someone as good as Christopher Sanchez if and when I sell Vlad. And that makes me think this is a pretty good deal for Devers. What are your thoughts?
Well, if I'm the guy with the expensive Devers who's out of contention, getting like a $9 Christopher Sanchez just sounds awesome. So from that side, I love it for the seller. For the buyer, I mean, it's tough to get a better talent than Rafi Devers. I think there's some context here. He's been horrible since he got to the Giants. I'm beginning, if Rafi Devers can't even hit in San Francisco, and he will hit. But if he can't, nobody can hit in San Francisco anymore. Everybody should just take steroids like Bonds, because hitting in San Francisco, it's over for that. And he's dealing with a disc injury in his back. He pissed off. Who is the former? The name's escaping me. Anyway, former Giant first baseman was going to teach him. Yes, Will Clark. Thank you. Yeah. And was going to teach him how to play first base. Devers just didn't show up. The Red Sox have won 10 in a row. I don't know. I'm beginning to draw some conclusions here about Devers' attitude. Now, does that really affect his fantasy value? We'll know, but the disc injury in his back certainly could. And the fact that the Giants suck, I know they have a good record. They've been pretty bad lately. I don't have a whole lot of faith in that team. That's my long way of saying a $9 Christopher Sanchez is a pretty valuable piece. I think getting Rafael Devers is a good return, but is it the Rafael Devers that, you know, we were expecting at the beginning of the season, or the Rafael Devers that was playing, you know, those last 3 weeks before he was traded from the Red Sox, where he was arguably the best hitter in baseball? I don't know if that's who you're going to get the rest of the season. But it's hard to be upset with it. I don't know. I don't know how you get better than Devers. I just personally, the player, I'm a little worried about him rest of the season.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like I said, I would have been very curious, like, had I been involved in aggressively shopping Vlad, like, I would take Vlad over Devers right now. Like, I would have. Now, what I don't know is if he had offered me Sanchez, would I have, like, I think I would have felt like I needed a little more. And now I'm looking at what's out there in this league and thinking, like, man, that would have been a nice get. Like, adding a solid top of your rotation type pitcher. You know, not an ace necessarily, but a guy that you can slot in at the upper half of your rotation, feel good about starting most of the time, if not all the time. Like, I would like to have gotten that. So I think that was a pretty good move for that team. Pete, you got a trade you want to throw out there? Actually, let's take a quick break. When we come back, then you can throw a trade out there. Sorry. I'm going to cut you off. Send us to break. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back. My apologies to Pete for cutting him off before we went to the ads. But now, Pete, I promise you can throw it out. I won't interrupt you.
That's all right. There's plenty to dive into in this league. But I'll go with, I guess, the most recent one. I thought it was a pretty balanced trade. Now, this league, you only keep three. So please keep that in mind that, like, there may be a player that you're like, oh, that's good value. Is he really one of the three players you want to keep, though? That's the difficult question in this league. A team that is selling traded away a 22nd round Trevor McGill. However, this is save plus holds, so closers have substantially less value in this format. A 9th round JT Realmuto. If you're like, holy crap, who took JT Realmuto in the 9th round? There's 16 teams, so the 9th round is pretty late. And the prized possession of this deal was a 7th round Brian Wu, which might end up actually having some keeper value, especially in a 16-team league. Yep.
One of three keepers? It'd be close.
Yeah, but he has been arguably as good as anybody. He's been as good as anybody. And this is a quality start league, so a guy who has literally gone at least 6 innings in every start he has made this year is pretty valuable. In return, the team that was buying had to sell, and so I know which side you're going to like because I know you're not a fan of this player. A last round, Chris Bubich, ERA under 2.5, whip of 1.16, over a strikeout in inning, Chris Bubich, who has not been as good lately. A last round, Shea Longoliers, and a last round, Giancarlo Stanton. So obviously, the hope was for Chris Bubich there. That's ultimately what the trade was. So it's an interesting one. I think all the context definitely matters. I think it's kind of even, but I don't know. I think I'd rather have a 7th round Wu than a last round Chris Bubich, I think.
Yeah. But I don't even think that's a hard choice. Obviously, like, you said it already, right? Like, I'm not a huge Bubich fan. And so I am lower on him than maybe the market. And so maybe that's factoring in here, but like, if Chris Bubich, even at a last round cost, is one of your three best keepers, you're not winning next year either.
Maybe.
Right? I mean, I guess it depends how you draft, right? I mean, I shouldn't say it. Like, a lot can happen in an offseason and stuff. But, like, I mean,
I get the reason why. Look, I totally understand why you're heavy-handed that this is a win for the team getting Brian Wu. Again, I don't necessarily think I disagree. I just, in a 16-team league, if you give up a pick to keep a player, so you're giving up a 7th-round pick to keep Brian Wu, like, you're not picking for, like, take a nap, man. Like, you're not picking for a long freaking time. You're picking pick 70. The next time you're picking might be pick, like, 120. It can be that long in a 16-team leg draft.
Right. So
that can bury you. And so those last-round picks are, in a league this deep, so, so valuable. But if you don't believe in the talent of Chris Bubich, then the point's kind of moot because you'd just rather have a talented player.
Yeah, I think part of it for me is, like, if this deal were just Bubich for Wu, but, like, he gave up a legit closer, and I understand saves plus holds, they're less valuable, but, like, I mean, that is still a relief arm that a contender is slotting into their lineup and is making their team better.
And he's been much better than I thought he was. He's been really good lately.
Yeah. Right. So, and then who's the third piece? There was
it's JT Realmuto for Longoliers, which honestly might be an upgrade.
Yeah, I just, like, I don't think Longoliers or Stanton are keepers. I don't. And so it just feels like you maybe improve the keeper value of one of your three keepers but you've lowered the ceiling of your keepers pretty dramatically. And you had to give up a bunch of other stuff, a couple other pieces, not a bunch of stuff, a couple other pieces to get that done. And that just feels like, I don't know. I would have been much closer to being like, I'm open to trading Bubic for Wu. Like, or I'm open to trade. I don't know. Like, I'm open to trading Wu for Bubic, but I need something more with Bubic rather than the other way. And the more went the other way. And that just, but it also, like, to be honest, like, this is all like with a keep three, getting more, getting like another piece added onto Bubic doesn't even make a difference because you're not going to keep that added piece unless there's like a minor league portion of this or something. If there's not, then it's not like, it's just a question of Wu versus Bubic. And I just, if I'm trading away someone as talented as Wu who might be a keeper, I want somebody I feel more confident in than I do in Bubic.
I think that's right. And I think the maybe the key component here is that we're still weeks out from our trade deadline. And I don't expect Brian Wu to lose any trade value. I mean, any pitcher could get hurt at any moment. So that forget about that for a second. But Wu is going to be a highly sought after piece in many leagues. He's an ace. And so trading him now for this package, that might end up being the mistake. Like Bubic might end up being like a perfectly fine third keeper, so long as he's in the last round and you get, you know, a decent season next year, and it could be fine. But could you have gotten a lot more down the line for a pitcher of Brian Wu's quality? That's probably the case.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It just doesn't feel like I guess what I'd say is I like in theory what that team did, which was they took Wu, they added two more useful pieces and said, I want a better keeper than that. And I just think they got the wrong one. Mm. That's what it is. Like the idea of doing like Wu plus something, Wu and McGill and Realmuto for like a late round guy who is a, but like at that point, it almost needs to be, I'm trading you seventh round Wu for an equivalent pitcher or close to equivalent pitcher on a last round contract. Plus I'm throwing in these other two guys so that your pitching is a wash, but your offense gets better. Your bullpen gets better. What, you know, these other pieces make the rest of your team better. Like that's a structure of a deal I can get behind. I just don't think Bubic is that guy.
Yeah. And I do think Wu at a seventh round pick in a 16 team league is going to end up being there's going to be value there. I think there is.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's jump to another trade. This one has so many moving pieces in it, and it's from our listener Otto New League. So it's probably one we should talk about. So let's start with this. There are two teams involved are in 10th and 8th. So this is not presumably a buy sell trade. This is two teams near the bottom half of the standings shuffling around keepers. And it's a fascinating one. So one of the teams received a $3 Jacob Mizorowski. All-star pitcher Jacob Mizorowski, apparently, and an $8 Spencer Schwellenbach, who's hurt. They gave up, the team that got those two gave up, a $24 Spencer Strider, who's sort of the prize here, along with $7 Jake Berger, $5 Jesus Sanchez, $2 Lucas Ursag, $1 Brady Singer, $1 River Ryan, and $1 Christian Scott.
Huh.
Now, I think we can boil this down a bit where, like, I don't think Scott and Ryan, who are both hurt and haven't established themselves, are particularly valuable pieces here. They're on the 60-day IL, so they can be stashed at no cost, but, like, they're not moving the needle for me either direction. If you disagree, I'm open to hearing that. But I just think like at $3 next year or $2 next year, whatever they'll be, like they're just not that exciting. Jake Berger has been bad. At $7, it's possible he plays his way into keeper value, but he's not looking like it right now. Jesus Sanchez, $5, probably worth holding on to, but you know, as a like you look at his rate slash, you know, this is a 4x4 league. So his rates is, you know, 319 OBP, 406 slugging. That's not super different from what he did last year. The slugging's down a bit. You'd expect a bit more power the rest of the way, but not a great park for it in Miami. So like, but Sanchez at $5, it's fine. Nothing wrong with him. Lucas Hurtsag is a $2 reliever, is fine. Like he's, you know, fewer strikeouts than innings this year, but other than that, everything looks pretty good. Brady Singer has shown signs in the past, but he's been not particularly good this year. Wasn't particularly good 2 years ago. He's sort of been up and down. At a buck, he's fine. But this feels very much like Strider and parts for Mizorowski and Schwellenbach. And that's it's an interesting trade.
It is. I understand both sides of this one. I know we normally have really hot takes on the keeper cut league trades, and I promise you I'm not like trying to tone it down, because if I didn't like it, I'd let everybody know. I love Spencer Strider. It's easy to forget he's still just 26 years old. So the value that you are trading for Spencer Strider here is suggesting that you're trading for vintage Spencer Strider, and he isn't that right now. However, his cost of $24 is not what a vintage Spencer Strider would cost. So on that end of it, you're leaving yourself some safety room there. I think even if Spencer Strider isn't ever going to return to what he was, which was the undisputed number one pitcher in fantasy for a brief period of time, I still think he's going to be very, very good, as we're seeing. He's getting hit incredibly hard. I don't know what's going on with the fastball, because the velocity is kind of still there. It didn't look like it was going to be there earlier, especially in his rehab, but like his fastball is averaging 95.6. That is down a decimal from where it was last year at 96.3, but it's not that dramatic where I think like it's the velocity. So if he can figure out his fastball again, stop having it get hit so hard, then I think he is going to return to kind of ace status. Now, what you're giving up, though, is two really, really good pieces. Who knows what's going on with Spencer Schwellenbach? Like, some make it seem like it's not that serious. It's a stress reaction. Like, he's probably going to be back before the season's over. It's also like a literal fracture in his elbow. Yeah. So like, I don't know where you fall on that one. But Jacob Mizorowski, as you said, all-star, which I think the Phillies just were kind of pathetic in their response to that. Obviously, Christopher Sanchez should be an all-star over Jacob Mizorowski. I think Mizorowski's family would agree with that, but like, you don't need to bury the kid. I don't know. It felt weird. That's a pretty damn good piece for $3. So I like this for both sides. I totally get it. If you're a Spencer Strider guy, you're willing to give up those pieces for Strider and kind of free yourself from Schwellenbach if you're worried about that. If you don't think Strider's going to be, you know, the Spencer Strider of old, which feels crazy to say because he's only 26, then you get out of that ahead. You're bringing in a new, younger, and much, much cheaper ace in Mizorowski, and then potentially another ace in Schwellenbach if he can overcome this elbow situation. So I totally get this one. I don't mind it at all. Berger, by the way, absolutely a cut at $7. The guy doesn't know how to take a walk, and this is 4x4. So see you later. And pretty much to all those other pieces, see you later. I don't want any of those guys.
Yeah, I think those other guys, like, what's interesting about those guys is there's a number of them who could make themselves interesting by the offseason, either as trade pieces or as keepers. But I think that's all it is like guys who could maybe be interesting. It does feel like it's Strider and some lottery tickets for Mizorowski and Schwellenbach, right? I mean, that's what it,
I'm not playing that lottery, man. I'm not paying for those.
But I do think, I think if I'm rebuilding, I think that I want to get the two younger, cheaper pitchers. I think that's what I want here, because I think like you can take those two plus the, let's assume you're going to cut all those other guys. You're going to save $13 versus Strider. Those two plus, you know, a $13 middle of the pack-ish solid starting pitcher is going to be a much better setup, I think, than Strider and two $1 pitchers, right? You know, now that isn't the only way to build, right? But I'm just trying to simplify things by thinking that's, you know, next year.
Yeah.
You go into next year's draft with a $26 Strider and with, see, 11, 12, 13, 14, $15 tied up in those two. So yes, you spend, yeah, that's basically what I'm looking at, right? Is like you spend $13 on another pitcher, you spend $2 or $1 each on a couple other guys. Like I think you're better off. I think even if Strider really comes back to form, there's a good possibility that he comes back to form and either Schwellenbach or Mizorowski is almost as good, if not as good. And then there's a chance he doesn't come back to form and you've got just more chances to get some production. So I like this though. I think it's a, you know, again, we were talking about in roto leagues, like teams at the top may not want to buy. And so that makes it hard to sell. But like, this is a good example of teams sort of middle bottom finding a way to do something, right? Like, you know, if you're looking at the team that got Strider, if I'm in their position, I'm looking at this going, I have my ace for next year at a reasonable price. I don't have to spend $50 at auction to get an ace. I've got an ace. And if you're the other team, you're probably sitting there thinking, man, I wish a team in first would buy Strider from me. And in this league, the team in first is 16 points up. They're probably not going to buy Strider from you. So this is a good way to find a way to get something done. So I like that piece of it.
Yeah, I think if we put it to a poll, I bet it'd be like 60-40 or 55-45 the Mizorowski side. I'm a total Strider honk, so I'm fine with either side, but it's a good trade. I like what both teams did here.
Any other trades you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, we could do one more. Same settings, so we don't have to go through all that again. We had one team that is in it and another team that is selling. The team that is selling, we'll start with them, traded away. Again, we're only keeping three, a ninth round Nick Lodolo. So and there's strikeouts per nine in this league, so I'd say Lodolo is almost definitely not a keeper. And what is going to cost a sixth round Jose Altuve, who has gotten hot lately. Now, the difference here is this is not Chris Bubich going back on the other side, Chad. I think you might like these players. Going back in exchange for those two players is a 14th round Cam Smith, and then this one, a 18th round, that's what he will cost to keep, Cole Reagans.
Remind me, who are the two players going the other way?
Nick Lodolo and Jose Altuve.
I mean, it's a little bit of a, it's an interesting one. I mean, obviously, like, Reagan's, I think a lot of this hinges on what you think is going to happen to Cole Reagans, right? Like, shoulder injuries, at some level, shoulder injuries scare me more than elbow injuries. Because if he were having Tommy John surgery, he'd be having Tommy John surgery. We would know what to expect. He'll be out for a year, year and a half, and then he'll come back and he'll probably be himself. Because that's sort of how it goes. He might not be himself on day one, but by day 40, he'll be himself. Fine. Shoulders are more likely to be the, like, maybe he'll come back. Maybe he'll be himself. Maybe he'll get back to full strength. Like, I'm... I think there's a real risk for the team that acquired Reagans here that they hit when's your decision deadline on keeper?
Oh man, not until 1 week before the draft,
which is that before spring training, during spring training?
It's usually towards the end of spring training.
That helps. That makes a big difference, because if this were an auto new league, like if you have a Cole Reagans in an auto new league, there's a real chance that you're going to hit January 31st. And have no information and have to make a decision on whether or not he's a keeper based on he hasn't thrown a pitch to a live hitter. You haven't seen him. There's no video. There's no radar readings. There's nothing. May not be the case, but that is a real possibility. And the risk with a shoulder is that in January, we're talking about, yeah, he's, you know, he's working his way back. He's strengthening his arm. He's throwing at 120 feet. We think he'll be back for the start of the season. Then spring training comes around and he can't really throw that much. He can't throw him back-to-back days. He finally gets on a mound late in spring training and his velocity is way down and he has no, like, there's a lot that can happen with shoulders that's very concerning to me. And so I think what the, I guess the overall point I'm making here is he scares me a lot in and out of new league or in any league where you have to make keeper decisions before spring training. If you're making it towards the end of spring training, like is the case here, I hope that manager is going into this trade eyes wide open that Reagans may not be a keeper.
Yeah, he probably is. I don't know with I don't think there's as much mystery with Reagans' injury. I mean, look, you hear pitcher and you hear shoulder, especially a guy like Reagans who's dealt with so many arm injuries in the past and throws so freaking hard. And the weird thing with Reagans, the added wrinkle to this is like we saw a dip in velocity over the last year and a half, and yet the production didn't really go away until this season where it really started to look a little iffy. But he's gotten two opinions. They both confirmed it's a rotator cuff strain. I'm not a doctor, but that doesn't sound like it's TOS or a torn labrum or something.
Rotator cuffs, like the history of pitchers coming back from rotator cuff injuries is not good.
Yeah, but I'd say probably if we looked at the grand history of pitchers coming off of any kind of arm injury, it's not going to look good. I still think on a case-by-case basis, some things might end up better than others. And if I'm trading for Cole Reagans, I'm glad he's put on the 60-day IL. Sure, rest him. And I'm kind of expecting less mystery. I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think this is something that like I feel good about or that like it can never come back or that he won't deal with shoulder injuries in the future. I don't think there's any way to know that. But I'm trading for him thinking, all right, I'm going to see this guy for 2 months and he actually doesn't need to be quite as good as he was before to be worth an 18th rounder. So I'm kind of okay with Cole Reagans. On the flip side of that, if I'm selling or if he comes back in early August and pitches August and September, yeah.
Do you really think? Here's the thing: I don't think he's coming back in early August. I don't buy it.
I just don't. Right now, that's the timeline. So unless I don't know why I would go against that at this point. I would need. If it was like, I don't know, the medical team of Houston, then yes, I wouldn't buy it. I don't think we'd see him until 2028. But I don't know. Do the Royals have that kind of shifty history? Like, but if is it a gamesmanship thing? Like, oh, teams, you better watch out in early August.
I don't think I saw that they said early August. They said he was shut down until July. He's not eligible to come back until early August because he's on the 60-day. I haven't seen anything that said it would be like the original reports talked about a 4-week shutdown. And 4 weeks from that day would be July 3rd. That was 10 days ago. And the only thing that's happened in the last 10 days is that they moved him to the 60-day, which means he's not eligible to come back until August 5th. I haven't seen any, I don't see any reports that say they expect him back. I don't see any reports about when they expect him back. I see nothing saying when he's coming back. I see when he's eligible to come back and that I will also note when I do a news search for him, there's been no news recently, which means that his shutdown is probably not over. Cause we would get that, like Cole Reagans has thrown a ball to a teammate, right? Like you'd get that, like those reports you get the first time they play catch. We haven't gotten that report yet. So his shutdown that was maybe going to end 10 days ago probably isn't over.
I don't know, it wouldn't surprise me if he's not back the first week of August, but I don't know why at this point I'd believe it's going to be that much later than this. So like, all right, if you don't see him for 2 months, you see him for a month and a half. Like, I don't know. Maybe I've just been reading this injury differently and I understand it's a player with a history, but like, it feels like they have clearly diagnosed it.
By the way,
they have a plan to get him come
back. Begin throwing.
They got him encouraging.
So he did begin throwing this week. So yeah, he was only a few days behind. They said 4 weeks. It was.
And his last MRI was quote encouraging.
Yeah. I'm still.
I'll give you this. It's a team that doesn't. The team is bad, so the team doesn't need to rush him back. They're going to be selling. They're going to want to start getting a look at maybe some of their younger kids. You know, have definitely Noah Cameron finish out the season, rotation, all that kind of stuff. But this does not The way I'm hearing you is this is like a doomsday injury, and I just
rotator cuffs, man.
At this point, rotator cuffs are. But it's a strain and not a tear.
Strain is a tear, right? Isn't that the
okay? But I feel like when they use a tear, when they use the language tear, it feels like it's more serious and that it's like surgery. The word surgery hasn't been thrown around.
Well, so the other thing I'll say about that on the surgery front is this is the like, oh, rest and recovery should be fine. And like, I mean, I tore my rotator cuff. I didn't have surgery. I did rest and recovery, and I can pitch as well now as I could before then. So, you know, still not well, but I could do it. So that totally could be it. But this is one of those things, like these kinds of injuries are the kinds of injuries that are like rest and rehab are all that's expected, unless when he starts to throw it is still a problem. And then they'll need surgery, which is why I was saying before that, like, I don't know, like if he tries to work his way back and it's not really going well, and he basically goes through a spring training process through, you know, mid July to mid August. And then they decide to shut him down because they're like, we may know nothing by March. And that's where I get real nervous. And rotator cuffs are worse than elbows for me at this point.
I haven't been given a reason to feel like this is some doomsday injury where like he's eligible to come back in early August, but we might not see this guy until March. Like that feels like a huge leap to me. Look, we've seen this story play out countless times before, but he hasn't had any setbacks. He was diagnosed with the same injury by two different doctors, and the last MRI said it was encouraging. So, like, it just doesn't feel like there's that much mystery behind it. It's an injury that countless pitchers have had before, and that he should hopefully be able to rehab it and come back. And if he can't, then if you don't see him the rest of the season because of a rotator cuff strain that he sustained in, what, early June at this point, don't keep him. Well, like, that's an easy call. But I think that's why you're getting him for old Jose Altuve in a clear down year and Nick Lodolo, who I just have zero interest in.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair. I think, to me, like, Smith in and of himself, like, that's a pretty nice get.
For a 14.
Yeah, he's been great lately.
But probably still a
keeper. I think more than...
He's cooled down a little bit, but a couple weeks ago... Especially, unsurprisingly, during his time in Colorado, sure. he's been off.
Yeah, but I mean, I think if you look at his, he's been a little bit cooler lately, like you said. But like, let's see, going back to June 11th, which was an arbitrary date because I just happened to click the 11th instead of some other date, he has a 151 WRC plus to Cam Smith. That's over a month.
That'll play.
Like he's been awesome. So I'm, you know, there's a 422 BAP up there that probably wasn't sustainable, but Smith's been great. I love picking him up in this deal. I think the history on rotator cuffs is like, it isn't to me just like, oh, this is an injury lots of pitchers have dealt with and come back fine. Like, that's not the history of rotator cuffs. The history of rotator cuffs is like pitchers deal with this and some of them come back and some of them don't ever really regain their form. And so that's where I'm more, I will say, like, I hadn't seen the report that he was throwing again. The fact that he's throwing again, that does give me more confidence that we'll see him at some point this year. But like, he's still not throwing with any intensity. He's still not throwing off a mound. He's still not throwing back-to-back days. Like, we're a ways out from seeing him.
If this is encouraging to people, similar age, similar skill level, Yamamoto missed most of last year with a rotator cuff strain, and yet he looks like one of the 5 best pitchers in baseball, 10 best pitchers in baseball. Every player is different. I just, so far, these couple news cycles for Cole Reagans, I'm not ready for it to be a doomsday injury for him.
Fair enough. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about a star whose star is falling a bit. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We've been talking about trade value, and I want to talk about trade value of Mookie Betts. And the reason I want to talk about Betts is he was just cut in one of my leagues. He's actually already back up for auction at least. He's cut a few days ago, I guess, at I think $74 or $75. Super expensive. And you can totally understand why a team at that price was like, well, I'm definitely not keeping this guy. I might as well cut him. Someone else will re-auction him for less than 40 and I'll get all that money back and can spend it. Betts on the year is at 4.55 points per game. Last year he hit 19 home runs. That was the fewest he's hit since his rookie season, not counting 2020. He is going to have to do some work to catch up to that 19 this year. He's at 11 and, the All-Star break, we talk about it being the midpoint of the season, but it's not the midpoint of the season. We're past the midpoint of the season. So he could get to 20 again. It could happen, but it's not a guarantee. He hasn't been a big base dealer ever, or at least not like a huge base dealer for a while. But he's only got 6 this year. Again, he's going to struggle to get to 10. He's never had less than 10. And the year, he's had 12, 14, and 16 the last 3 years. Things don't look great for Mookie Betts right now. And, he's 32. He'll turn 33 during the postseason. The strikeout rate is still, elite. The walk rate is still good. He's not hitting the ball as hard. Max EV is down for another second straight season. His average EV is way down. His hard hit rate is down. His barrel rate is down. 307 WOBA, 327 ex-WOBA. So Betts is, for all intents and purposes, he is earning this poor performance that he's putting up. And so I did want to take a look at, in Fangraphs points leagues, what trades have happened for him recently. Because if you had him as one of your stars, if you had him as a high price star, your team's probably not doing well. Because you've got this guy eating up a ton of your salary that isn't helping. And so you're probably looking to sell him. But there just isn't much there. And so here's some deals that have involved Mookie Betts recently. Let's say $59 Mookie Betts and a $3 Lucas Giolito for $25 Austin Riley and $7 Andrés Muñoz. And I think this deal happened, it processed yesterday, so it must have happened a couple days ago before Riley went on the IL. That sucks for that team. That's one deal. A $63 Mookie Betts and a $13 Alec Bohm for $3 Lázaro Montes and $2 Chase DeLauder. That went down 3 days ago, so before we got the news that DeLauder's dealing with hand soreness or wrist soreness or something.
Oh my God. I was just going to ask you, when are we finally going to see this stud? Are you kidding?
I'll pull up the news, but no, I wish I were kidding, obviously.
I feel bad for this kid. Why? The second he's healthy, can we call him up, please?
This is the thing I think that's bothering me about the way Cleveland is acting with him is I understand that he hasn't had a ton of time in AAA. It's not like he's been in AAA for a year and a half and has gotten 600 plate appearances and but the guy has shown he can hit AAA, shown he can hit AA. He is I don't know what they're waiting for. And I hate to say it, but I think they're worried that if they bring him up, he's going to get hurt and they're going to have to pay him.
Oh, that sucks.
It's really frustrating. But anyways, it says he's been dealing with soreness in the wrist for the last couple of weeks. The symptoms increased before Saturday's game, causing him not to play, and they're evaluating. Now, wrist soreness could be nothing, right? I mean, he could just have a sore wrist and a couple days off could solve that. But with his history, it's hard not to imagine that the next step is an MRI that reveals that he's torn some ligament in his wrist and needs to have surgery to repair it or something. But anyways, that isn't what we're really here to talk about. The point is DeLauder and Lázaro Montes were the trade pieces going one way for Mookie Betts and Alec Bohm coming back the other way. And then one other deal I'll mention, Mookie Betts at $55 for a $7 Jordan Lawler, a $1 Kyle Teal, and a $1 Aiden Miller. And I think what stands out about all of these deals to me, maybe less so the Riley Munoz deal, because that's just a different shape of a deal. But the prospects that are coming back for him in these other two deals are Lázaro Montes, who has big potential, but still some questions, is in double A, isn't going to be up anytime soon. Chase DeLauder, who's got his injury history. That's one of the deals. The other deal is Jordan Lawler, who's also got an injury history and is hurt again. Kyle Teal, who looks good, but is a catcher, and that's, you know, there's questions there. And Aiden Miller, who's not having a particularly good season in double A. Now he's only 21. Like, I think Aiden Miller is still an interesting prospect, but like, he's got a 114 WRC plus in double A. That isn't bad. And so I, when I say not a particularly good season, I should be clear. Like, I'm not denigrating what he's doing, but he's not tearing the league apart. And his profile, because he's a stolen base guy, doesn't really stand up in Fangraphs points leagues as well as it in would in other formats. So like, I don't know. It's interesting to me. Betts just isn't attracting. He's not getting top end talent back, which tells me that the market is looking at him and saying, like, I'm not confident he's going to return to form.
Yeah, it's a tough one, because I don't want to bet against Mookie Betts, but his career is kind of reminding me of one of my absolute favorite players, Andrew McCutchen. Now, McCutchen, very similar player. So if you've new to baseball, just started fantasy, whatever, McCutchen was an absolute stud.
He's MVP.
The fact that he has played, right, he was an MVP. He was top five in MVP voting, I think, 4 years in a row. Very, very similar to Mookie Betts, but Mookie Betts is 180 pounds and 5'10". That's not a particularly big guy. Andrew McCutchen, 5'10", 190 pounds. Outfielders who played hard, played all the time. Now, Andrew McCutchen's fall off can maybe be attributed to a cataclysmic event, which was him tearing his ACL. Right. And Mookie Betts has not had like that event. You know what I mean? So maybe this is a little bit more inexplicable, but I think there's not everybody can be Jose Altuve and hit, you know, 300 up until they're 35 years old or whatever it is. And at some point it all catches up, and there's a lot of miles on Mookie Betts, man. So I'm not saying he's washed. I'm not saying he's done. I am probably saying that I don't think you're going to get first round Mookie Betts ever again. I think he almost has too much ground to gain at this age to do that. With that said, if I am buying as bad as he's been to get a guy who's in the top three in the Dodgers lineup who has the history that Mookie Betts has, I still get why it would be tempting to buy him. So I'm still a little surprised at these returns, because you're right, these aren't great returns. Now, look, I was ready to, I picked up Chase DeLauder in quite a few, even redraft leagues or keeper leagues, where like it would be crazy for him to actually be a keeper, because I thought he was right in the precipice of being called up. So I don't know if that trade was before the hand soreness or what's going on, but like, I actually think Montes and DeLauder especially is a pretty good return for Mookie Betts if you're a selling team, because if you're a selling team, you're trying to get rid of him. If I'm buying, though, I don't want one of my competitors to get Mookie Betts. Like, I don't know that he's becoming Andrew McCutchen. He might still be Mookie Betts in there. So I'm surprised. And if you're buying and there's not a lot of great options out there and somebody is willing to give you Mookie Betts for prospects of that caliber, okay, do it. Get him. The data be damned, it's Mookie Betts. And he should at least be a bucket of runs in the second half, if nothing else.
I think the other thing with Betts, you're talking about the cataclysmic event with Kutch. Betts, and I'm not saying this is a cataclysmic event, so I want to be clear on that. Betts did have that viral whatever in the off season where he lost like 20 pounds.
Yeah, that was
weird. And
but then didn't he start so the season hot?
He came out and through April 14th, so just, you know, sort of arbitrary picking a couple weeks into the season, he had a 169 WRC plus. He had hit four home runs in those first 65 plate appearances, including two in the second Japan game, if you remember. Mm-hmm. Since April 15th, since, you know, maybe he doesn't like paying his taxes or something, but since April 15th, he has an 82 WRC plus and seven home runs in 321 plate appearances. And I can't help but wonder if He lost a lot of weight. He lost a lot of muscle. He lost a lot of endurance. And the season is just dragging on him in a way that it hasn't in the past. And so if that's the case, like, I don't want to be buying bets. And I don't think I do. I think if I'm contending, I don't think he's a guy I want to buy. I would rather go find somebody I'm feeling like I'd rather pay more for somebody I think is going to, I'm more confident will produce. But I am really interested come draft season next year, what Mookie Betts is saying. If he comes into camp and is like, the offseason really helped. I got right. I put 20 pounds of muscle back on. Let's go. Then I'm going to probably be buying in at above whatever his draft cost is. I don't know what his draft cost will be, but it'll be down from what it's been because the season is going to justify that. And I think I will be buying back in. The only caveat on top of that is, last year he did only hit 19 home runs, right? Like he had a down year on a power year last year. And so like, this isn't just a one-off.
6% barrel rate last year, 6%.
So, but I do think that going into next season, if he comes back into spring and is talking about health, talking about having put some weight back on, things like that, I am open to buying in on him like it's his 2024 season that we're buying off of rather than his 2025. I'm open to sort of writing off this season. But as a buyer right now, I can't, like, it's, if I'm writing off this season, I don't want him now. So I think I guess what I'm getting at is, like, I'm kind of okay with the team that cut him just saying, forget it. I'm not going to get good value for him and I'm going to just cut him loose. And as I'm looking at him sitting out there at a $37 bid, I have $20 of cap space and I'm debating how much more I can clear. Because if I can get him for $38, $39, have him at $40 next year, I'm sort of intrigued by that.
Yeah. And that's what I meant by like the middling prospects too.
Yeah.
You know, like you said you'd rather pay more for more guarantee. I'd do both. I would do both. I would trade for Mookie Betts. I'd trade my middling prospects for Mookie Betts, and I'll trade my elite prospects for, I don't know, somebody who's coming, Yordan Alvarez, and let's see this thing ride. But I don't know. We'll see. It's tough. Even with just 19 homers, just 16 stolen bases, and a 6% barrel rate in 2024, still went as the 11th player off the board in NFBC. Yeah. So, like, I don't know if the discount is going to be appealing enough for me, but maybe it's like double discount because now it's 2 years of poor production.
Yeah, I'm assuming the discount will be steeper than that. But you're right. If he's going, I mean, honestly, he probably shouldn't even be going in the second round, right? We should be looking at it as like a third, like almost a guy like where we've seen Christian Yelich going the last couple of years, like that kind of, like, MVP caliber
talent. Even if he's a third rounder.
Yeah.
If he's a third rounder, I'm holding my nose when I take him.
So that's the thing. I think I'm okay taking him in the third. I guess what I'm getting at is this. If he falls outside the top 50, I'm going to feel okay jumping ADP and taking him.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that might be what happens. Right? And so we'll just have to see. But I'm actually, as I say that, and talking about like, oh man, I'm not sure I'd want to take him in the second round. Third round is borderline. I don't know that I want him for $40 either in auto new. So maybe I'm going to pass on him in that league.
So much depends on the second half. Because if he looks like Mookie Betts, he's going to go right back in the first round again. And we're going to have this conversation in a year, perhaps.
Yeah, totally fair. All right. Well, I think that's about all the time we got today. Pete, thanks for discussing some trades with me. Listeners, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with you next week.